overwhelmed officials tried to bring in essential supplies and services and began to ferry people out of New Orleans. The first buses arrived at the Astrodome in Houston, Texas today, but the crowd outside the Superdome swelled as thousands more poured in to be evacuated. Dallas and San Antonio agreed to take in 25,000 refugees apiece. Governors from several states dispatched National Guard units to help. Here in Washington, D.C., officials organized shipments of fuel, food, water, generators, ice, and medical supplies, but little of that has reached the area as yet. Former Presidents Bill Clinton and George H.W. Bush met at the White House with President Bush earlier today. The two former presidents will head a fundraising effort, as they did after the Indian Ocean tsunami. Here's a bit of President George W. Bush speaking a few moments ago.
Good afternoon. Thanks for coming. I'm honored to be with former Presidents Bush and Clinton. Thank you all for being here. We just spent some time talking about the devastation caused by Hurricane Katrina. I brought them up to date on what I know about the latest developments there on the ground. We're united in our sympathy. We're united in our determination to help the good people that have been affected by this hurricane. I'm in close contact with Secretary Chertoff. He was in the Oval Office earlier today. He's in close contact with FEMA Director Brown. I want to make sure I fully understand the relief efforts and the extent of the relief efforts and the progress of the relief efforts. After all, we're dealing with one of the largest relief efforts in our nation's history, and the federal government's got an important role to play. Our first priority, of course, is to save lives. There are over 80 FEMA teams that have been deployed to the Gulf Coast to conduct search and rescue missions. I want to thank those who are working long hours for their dedication to saving lives. We got Coast Guard folks and Navy and Army and Air Force and National Guardsmen from many different states that are delivering needed supplies and providing the rescue missions, trying to reach those in danger. We're working hard to repair the breaches in the levees. Federal, state, and local agencies are also cooperating to sustain life. That means getting food and water to those who are stranded. Medical personnel and local officials are helping hospital patients and people gathered in the Superdome to evacuate. Again, I want to thank the folks in Texas for welcoming those people. Bus caravans are shuttling back and forth between Houston and New Orleans to get those folks to Houston. Law enforcement and National Guardsmen and local leaders are working to restore public order. Earlier today, General Blum, along with Mike Chertoff, gave me a briefing about the number of guards folks trained in police work that will be moving into New Orleans, as well as other law enforcement officials from around the area. As we speak, people are moving into the New Orleans area to maintain law and order. And I thank them for their good work. Government agencies are working with faith-based and community groups to find shelters for thousands of displaced persons. And finally, we're moving forward with a comprehensive recovery strategy. We're working hard to restore electric power, repair transportation infrastructure, restart energy production, and, of course, strategize as to how to provide housing for these folks. I met with Chairman Greenspan at lunch, as well as the economic team, to evaluate the impact of Hurricane Katrina. We particularly spent a lot of time talking about the damage done to our energy infrastructure and its effect on the availability and price of gasoline. In our judgment, we view this storm as a temporary disruption that is being addressed by the government and by the private sector. We've taken immediate steps to address the issue. The Secretary of Energy is approving loans of crude oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. The EPA has provided a temporary nationwide waiver for fuel requirements so supplies of gasoline can move more easily within our country. and so that we can attract more gasoline from overseas. We're also working with energy companies to repair and reactivate major refineries and pipelines. The good folks must understand that major refineries have been shut down, which means it's going to be hard to get gasoline to some markets. We're working to help these pipelines get up and running. Pipelines carry refined product. And so we're working with the majors, major oil companies, to get the with Colonial Pipeline so they can carry the products of the major oil companies, the refined products. Right now, the Colonial Pipeline, which is the major pipeline serving the East Coast, is back in operation, but only at 50% capacity. We anticipate that as the days go by, more and more of that capacity will be restored. Other major pipelines are coming back online. But as I said, we're going to have a temporary disruption of gasoline product. Another challenge we face is that the downed pipelines are causing the need to transport gasoline to needed markets by ship. Under current law, shipping between American ports can only take place on American ships. And there are currently not enough American ships to move the oil and gasoline to where it's needed. So today I've instructed Secretary of Homeland Security Chairman Chertoff to temporarily waive this requirement so foreign ships can also help distribute oil and gasoline to where it's needed. Today's action will further help us move gasoline to accommodate the demands of the American citizens. Steps we're taking will help address the problem of availability, but it's not going to solve it. Americans should be prudent in their use of energy during the course of the next few weeks. Don't buy gas if you don't need it. This recovery is going to be a long process. It's going to take a lot of hard work and patience and resolve. It's also going to require a lot of money. And the federal government will do its part. But the private sector needs to do its part as well. And that's why I've asked Presidents Bush and Clinton to lead a nationwide fundraising effort to help the victims of Hurricane Katrina. In the days ahead, the former presidents will ask Americans to open their hearts and their wallets to help those in need. And they're going to talk to large corporations and small businesses and individual citizens across the nation. The contributions will benefit the relief organizations that are doing vital work on the ground. We're going to take a look and make sure that the money raised is money needed. Right now, if our fellow citizens want to help, they ought to give a cash donation to the Red Cross, which they can find at a phone number 1-800-HELP-NOW. I was so proud of the efforts that President Clinton and President Bush did to help the victims of the tsunami relief. Our country marveled at their capacity to rally our citizens and to work together. And once again, I've asked them to work to help the needs of those who hurt. And once again, I'm confident that the American people will respond. I know this is an agonizing time, or we all know this is an agonizing time, for the people of the Gulf Coast. I ask their continued patience as recovery operations unfold. I can assure them that their thoughts and prayers of the entire nation are with them and their loved ones. I'm also confident that when it's all said and done, the efforts to rebuild the great city of New Orleans and to rebuild those communities in Mississippi and to help the folks in Alabama will make this nation a stronger place. May God bless you all.
President Bush in the Oval Office just a few moments ago. I was speaking, as he mentioned, with former Presidents Clinton and Bush, who will be heading up an effort to raise funds for the victims of Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans and along the Gulf Coast. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. If you'd like to join the conversation about the after effects of Hurricane Katrina, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's get a caller on the line, and this is Julie. Julie's calling us from Onsted in Michigan.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air, Julie.
Hi. We have family in Mendenhall, Mississippi. It's about 60 miles southeast of Jackson, Mississippi. Because they're not located on the coast, people aren't knowing of their plight. I think they are without electricity, without water, without food. The grocery stores are empty, and the gasoline is not there. So basically, we have people stranded inland without these vital things.
Obviously, much attention has certainly focused on the inundated city of New Orleans, but there is huge destruction along the Mississippi Gulf Coast. And as you mentioned, this goes well inland, too.
That's right. My husband's heading down there with his truck and a trailer full of gas and water and canned food, but we haven't been able to get in touch with his mother and sister and cousins that are there. There's been one cell phone call only to tell us the situation, that they've been without electricity and water for a few days now.
Mm-hmm. People are getting, not only that, but you're, I'm sure, having people coming in from even more desperately stricken areas.
Well, this is rural Mississippi. These people weren't evacuated because they weren't in they weren't expected to be hit hard by the hurricane. All of people that were on the coast did evacuate inland.
Well, regrettably, not all of them, I'm afraid, Julie.
Yeah, well, no, I'm sorry. I'm talking about our family.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see.
But the ones that made it to inland Mississippi, some of them are stranded now inland, and the ones that are in the small cities, they don't have gasoline to get to the grocery stores. The cousin who contacted us said the grocery store's shelves are empty. They have no food or water.
Julie, thank you for the phone call. We appreciate it. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, our email address, totn@npr.org. We're going to take a short break, and when we return, we'll talk with the executive director of the Mississippi Fairgrounds, which has gone from a place of celebration to a place of shelter. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. President Bush will leave Washington, D.C. tomorrow to visit some of the worst affected areas, New Orleans and along the Mississippi Gulf Coast. Tomorrow, Congress is also expected to return early from its summer recess to pass what's called a supplemental, that's a $10 billion measure for emergency aid to pay for supplies, for getting supplies to people down in the affected regions. Shelters all around the affected areas are taking in evacuees. Joining us now is Mike Brinkley, executive director of the Mississippi Fairgrounds, which is serving as a Red Cross shelter for storm victims. Mr. Brinkley, welcome.
Thank you, Neil. Thank you.
Are you getting what you need?
We are. Right now I got my feet propped up, which is very much I need right now.
Yeah, I bet you do. It's been a long couple of days, I bet.
It has. But we got about 2,400 evacuees here, and we're showing the best that we can right now.
And the fair, I'm afraid I don't know the schedule when the Mississippi Fair is normally held, but I'm assuming it isn't now.
No, it's not. Our fair is the first week in October.
So you got some time to go.
We still got 4 weeks to go, right.
And where are people staying?
Our Mississippi Coliseum. We have about 1,400 to 1,500 in our Coliseum, and we have about 1,000 that's in our Trademark. Our Trademark is a 66,000-square-foot facility. They're in two bays of our Trademark, and then the Coliseum, of course, is holding the rest of them.
You have power? You have food, water?
Oh, yes, sir. We do. We have electricity. We, of course, we're Red Cross, so they get three hot meals a day. They have cots. They have pillows. They have blankets. We have people here that are painting faces of kids, and we have movies that we're showing for the kids. And, I mean, the volunteers around this area have really, really pitched in to the ones who need.
We were talking earlier today with a reporter in that area who said gasoline is in short supply.
Yes, sir, it is. We just had surrounding our property is hotels and gas and food. And I know I was out a little while ago on our property, and there was a car that has been waiting for 2 days that they knew that a tanker was coming in today. That tanker has arrived, and that gas will be gone within 2 or 3 hours.
When people get there, what's the first thing they ask for?
A place to sit down. First, when they come, of course, they have to register through Red Cross. And once they're registered, then we take them to an area. And, you know, our floor is concrete. So we take them to where they can get a pillow, a blanket. And if that, at that time, if we have a blow-up mattress or any type of bedding, we give them that. And then we show them where they can get some linen, where they can get some clothes, soap, towels. You know, we have facilities here to where they can take baths.
Obviously, people coming with a lot of people coming with just what they're wearing.
Oh, yes, yes. A lot of people lay off thinking, you know, this is going to be a hurricane like in the past. And, you know, we're only going to stay in Jackson for 2 or 3 nights. But now it's not turning into that. So, yes, sir, you're right. They came with the clothes they have on their back.
As you know, and everybody knows, it turns out there are still an awful lot of people who will need places to stay. The fairgrounds there, are you at capacity now?
We have a few more vacancies left. You know, we do have people who are leaving. But as we leave, we have them coming right in. We have some of these smaller, you know, all your churches around this area, they're all equipped for 2, 3, 4 days, 5 days, you know, the maximum.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are not Red Cross shelters, so therefore they have to really, really depend on their community. 2, 3, 4 days in their community, their volunteers start going away, their food starts going away, so now they have to find shelter for the people who they've taken in. So then they come and they'll try to turn to us.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, if we have vacancies, we don't turn a single soul down if we have a vacancy.
Sure. I wonder, is frustration beginning to build?
Tempers are sparing a little bit. The main thing that we do here is we try to comfort as much as possible. We try to separate things as much as possible, even down to your toiletry and stuff, you know. Put it into a different location to where two people cannot or three people cannot fight over it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's now. We're only a few days into it. As a couple weeks or a week get into it, then, of course, patience become the issue.
Mike Brinkley, thanks very much.
Thank you, Neil, and God bless everybody out there.
And take a couple more minutes with those feet up. Burned it.
Thank you, sir.
Mike Brinkley, Executive Director of the Mississippi Fairgrounds, which is serving as a Red Cross shelter. Joining us now is Congressman Charles Pickering of Mississippi. His district covers parts of the cities of Natchez, Meridian, and Pearl, and some of the suburbs of the capital city of Jackson. Congressman, good of you to be with us.
Well, thank you. It's good to be with you.
And where are you exactly?
I'm in Jackson, Mississippi today. My home is right outside of Jackson in Madison County, and my original hometown is Laurel, Mississippi, all places that have been severely affected by the hurricane. But my whole district stretches from Natchez on the Mississippi River to Meridian, Mississippi on the Alabama line, and the strength of Katrina did severe damage to all of those places that are 90 to 150 miles inland.
As you talk to people in your district, are they getting what they need from local, state, and federal governments?
They are. What we need right now is power, and we need fuel, as well as the shelters that have been opened up are getting the supplies, water, food, other basic necessities. But it is a strain, as you can imagine, on everyone. The lack of fuel and the lack of power creates hardship. And it's a situation that we hope can improve over the next week.
Mm-hmm. As we look ahead, the next week is one thing, but this is going to go ahead for weeks and months into the future.
If we can restore some of the basic services, and if our fuel supplies stabilize, and then we can get beyond the current crisis, then we can begin rebuilding and recovering. But right now we're at that critical stage that we have to get the power back, communications back. We have to meet the needs of the sick and the elderly. We're trying to rescue and search for those who are missing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a very trying and difficult time. Everyone is working as hard as they can around the clock, and we're trying to bring all the resources of the military, of national security, of the local agencies, emergency and FEMA, to bear. But this is, while we have fuel shortages, and power outages, it is a very difficult climate in which to work.
I know people are working as hard as they can, but we keep hearing people asking questions, particularly people perhaps to the south and west of where you are, saying, what is taking so long?
The severity of the storm, and for example, I was in Laurel, Mississippi yesterday, and the number of trees that are down that have just completely wiped out our power infrastructure, our wires and telephone poles, it is going to take a long time to be able to rebuild and recreate the electric power system. And that is one of the things that's taken so long. There was just such complete devastation and destruction of our infrastructure that we're operating our critical facilities like rest homes and hospitals on generators and off diesel-powered generators. And we're trying to do everything we can to get the fuel to them so that they can maintain those emergency services. And in the meantime, it's being done in many cases without cell service or without any communication or power.
If there was a, well, obviously, let me ask the same question again. If you could call the White House and ask the president for one thing or the federal government to deliver one service, what would it be?
To get as much fuel to our areas as possible. Help us rebuild our power and our communication systems as quickly as possible. To release the National Guard and the military resources as quickly as possible to allow them to use their fuel, their tankers, their generators, their emergency medical supplies, and they are doing those things. But we've just got to get people out on the ground and in all these communities. It's not just in New Orleans and on the Mississippi Gulf Coast, but it's in every small community and town, 90 miles and 150 miles inland.
Congressman Pickering, thanks very much. Sounds like you've got another call anyway.
Thank you very much.
Congressman Charles Pickering, a Republican from the 3rd District of Mississippi, and he joined us today from Jackson. And let's get a caller on the line, and this is Stephanie. Stephanie calling us from Naples, Florida.
Hello.
Hi, Stephanie. You're on the air.
Hi. Well, I'm trying to find out what we can do as local citizens to help. I understand the email. Go to an email and give a cash donation, but get those people out of New Orleans. Why are the efforts so slow?
That's a question that a lot of people are asking, and I'm not sure that's that's an effort that individuals can help with. I do know that if you can go to our website at npr.org, there's more information on how to help victims of Hurricane Katrina. But I think you're right, Stephanie. The big question now is how to get people out of New Orleans and some of these other affected areas along the Gulf Coast and get them help in the meantime and then get them out.
Right. It's just, I mean, there's so many millions of Americans that feel helpless, and I know that the federal government is in there, but there's local citizens like myself. I have a medical community in Broward County waiting, wanting to do something. I mean, we can coordinate air ambulance transportation between the federal, the local, the state governments, and private citizens. It is amazing to me that in America we have people that are waiting around in the filth that they are, and they can't get people out of hospitals. It doesn't make any sense.
Stephanie, you raised some good points. Appreciate the phone call. Thank you. All right. Bye-bye. Let's talk now with Fernando. Fernando calling us from San Antonio in Texas.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I don't know. Here we're worrying about trivialities with the NFL New Orleans Saints coming to placing their operations here in San Antonio. At the same time that my wife and I, who are both nurses, are receiving word from our hospital administrators that we'll be taking care of some of the sick that will be coming from the hurricane-ravaged areas.
Yes, San Antonio, as has been reported, Dallas, and, of course, Houston have all agreed to, I think, take 25,000 refugees.
Yes. Now, as far as where we'll be putting these patients, we don't know. I'm sure the sickest will be going to actual hospitals. With San Antonio having such a large military presence, with the four Air Force bases and the Academy for the Health Sciences here stationed at Fort Sam Houston, the Army, I'm sure we'll have plenty of tents to set up around town. But as far as the details, we don't know yet. But I do know they're asking us to volunteer our time, which I'm sure most of us, if not all of us, will do.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds, obviously, the caller we just spoke with, and I'm sure many other people around the country, all desperate to do something. It sounds, Fernando, as if you're going to have that opportunity shortly.
Yeah, I'm afraid we're going to have that opportunity. I wish we didn't have to.
The necessity is regrettably there. It's just communities reaching out, San Antonio, Dallas, Houston, and, of course, many other communities throughout Louisiana and throughout Mississippi all pitching in. We heard about the fairgrounds there in Jackson. So, Fernando, yeah. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate it. We're talking about the Katrina crisis. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And joining us now from Biloxi, Mississippi, is the executive editor of the Biloxi Sun-Herald, the main newspaper there. This is Stan Tyner. Nice to have you on the program.
Thank you, and good afternoon, Mr. Cohen.
Good afternoon. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the editorial from yesterday.
Well, I think it was an expression that that came from the heart of the community. I mean, we live here, and our hearts are broken. This newsroom has been touched profoundly by it. We send reporters out to cover the story, and they go out and discover their homes have been destroyed, and we hug and cry, and we go on. But as we go back to our roles as reporters, wherever we go, these veterans, for the most part, and some young reporters go out, and we're all touched by people saying, "I'm thirsty, give me something to drink, I beg you. I'm hungry, give me something to eat." And we have professionals in the business of delivering emergency services who are saying to us that it's not fast enough, that their threshold of being able to not move quicker has been exceeded.
Mm-hmm.
So the headline that said, "Help us now," we think was very much the voice of people in South Mississippi trying to get some attention down here. And I thought one paragraph in the editorial said something that maybe was at the essence of it when it says, "We're not calling on the nation and state to make life here more comfortable. We're calling on the nation and the state to make life here possible."
What is it that you need now?
Well, I think you need all of it. And the thing about it is sometimes in the conversations that we've heard and the articles we see, people will focus on Biloxi or Gulfport or someplace where maybe the media are at a given time. And in all truth, I mean, the Point Cadet area, East Biloxi and Gulfport, you know, these are profoundly catastrophic events with the loss of life and property on a scale nobody's ever seen before. And yet, from state line to state line, from the Louisiana border to Alabama and up into the counties, Picayune, Pearlington, we're hearing dreadful damage there. I don't know that's gotten the attention that deserves. So it's so far afield that there just needs to be the congressman is right in talking about the need for gasoline and for communications that will help us do all the other things that we need to do, but these people that need water and need food, that obviously is first, and we know there are many, many people who are working hard to do that, but it's just not enough, and it's not fast enough.
Are people beginning to ask questions about evacuation procedures, about why more people weren't taken out?
You know, I think that moment will come, but there is too much immediate pain in dealing with the circumstance of life and continuing life. I think those discussions will take place later.
President Bush, as you know, will be touring the region tomorrow, as we understand it. If he stops by the offices of the Sun-Herald, what might you tell him?
Well, much as we have said, is that get more people in more places while there still can be. I mean, the speculation is that there's still people that might be rescued, but this, in addition to the damage, there the heat now is sometimes in the triple digits, the heat index is, and it's a miserable place without air conditioning. There is no air conditioning. So I know that the president and the Congress is concerned about our plight, but you know, one of the things that we're concerned about is that either event taken unto itself, either New Orleans by itself or the Mississippi Gulf Coast and the even upper, as Congressman Pickering pointed out.
Inland, yeah.
Well, I'm sorry?
Inland, yeah.
Well, inland, that our state is so massive, the area of destruction, that either one of those taken separately would have been probably the largest humanitarian crisis in this country. I guess that would be a true statement.
Mm-hmm.
And you put them together, and it's we understand that it's awful and it's large and it's overwhelming.
I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there, Stan.
Yes, sir.
Stan Tyner, executive editor of the Biloxi Sun-Herald, kind enough to join us from his offices there today. More after the break. This is NPR News. The mayor of New Orleans said today he's sending out a desperate SOS because of the fires, fights, and looting in the area, plus victims of the storm waiting hungry and thirsty with filthy floodwaters all around them. The White House launched a full-court press to offer aid to the affected region. We heard earlier from President Bush, who again brought in his father, former President George H.W. Bush, and former President Clinton, to lead a fundraising effort for the disaster victims, as they did for tsunami victims earlier this year. We've also heard that Congress will be reconvening a little earlier than expected to pass a special measure, $10 billion, for aid to victims of the hurricane. Give us a call if you're involved. If you're in the region, what do you need? Are you getting help that you need? 800-989-8255. 800-989-TALK. Email is totn@npr.org. To get a sense of the security issues that law enforcement officials are facing, we turn now to Trooper Julie Lewis of the Louisiana State Police. She joins us now by phone from Baton Rouge. I know you're busy. We appreciate your time today.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon, Neil.
We were hearing terrible things about the security situation in New Orleans. What can you tell us?
I know there's a lot of rumors running around right now. They're a dime a dozen, and we ask the public, please don't put any credence into what you hear rumor mill. Anytime there's any type of situation, rumors just run rampant. So please don't take those to heart. Let us authenticate those, and if they're in fact actual cases, we will put that information out. But what we are dealing with, the reality of it is, the looting was rampant, of course, as everyone's seen on television coverage.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately following the hurricane, law enforcement role, it was at that point to assist the Coast Guard and the National Guard and the Wildlife and Fisheries Departments in the rescue and search and rescue missions. And unfortunately, we have a certain criminal element who feels the need to take advantage of others in this time of crises. And that element happened to secure weapons in part of their looting of pawn shops and such.
Mm-hmm.
And now they are threatening other people's lives. So we're not out there to them necessarily for the looting, but the concern is not property. It is lives. They are threatening lives. Therefore, it will soon come to end.
And when did that priority switch?
Yesterday is basically when we got... we got to seeing how things were really, coming into play. We're seeing a lot of things, of course. Unfortunately, sometimes we have to get it through the media and watching it here, people calling in telling us what's happening. Unfortunately, we've had a lot of false reports, people calling in from outside areas saying so-and-so's trapped somewhere and they're being held at gunpoint. Then we send our SWAT team in, and it's a false report. So things like that, they're really wasting our manpower, we don't have time to waste. What we have now is we have approximately 250 officers in the New Orleans area, 170 of which are Louisiana State Troopers. NOPD is going to have another 1,100 people. I know National Guard is sending in a great amount of troops. We're looking at thousands of people coming from National Guard. Our colonel has requested vehicles, types that can handle floodwaters.
Mm-hmm.
From FEMA and Homeland Security, so I understand those are coming. Our biggest need right now is that of ground transportation, such as large school buses, Greyhound, those type of large commercial vehicles, because we're needing to move large amounts of people in as quickly as possible, and that's the most effective way to do that.
Evacuation, the mayor and the governor want everybody out of the city of New Orleans. This is going to take a long time.
It is. We're constantly still getting calls of people who are calling and saying that they're stranded. And those processes, they're not stopping at this point. U.S. Customs and Wildlife and Fisheries are still actively searching and rescuing people. That has not ended. So mm-hmm. I don't want anyone to think that merely because the law enforcement role has returned back to law enforcement and law and order that people are not being searched for and rescued. That's not the case. It's just... We're assisting those other agencies. Now we're back into the law enforcement role.
I know you're not the decision maker here, but a lot of people are asking questions. You're describing the forces that will be in New Orleans over the next few days. And the question people ask is, why did it take so long? These would have all been helpful a couple of days ago.
Exactly. But, you know, everyone has contingency plans. We all plan for disasters such as this, but you never really know what's going to happen. There's no way to possibly plan for every single scenario. I am sure if the president, you know, had the foresight to have seen what was going to happen, he would have made sure that we had National Guard people out here as well, and including our governor. I think they're doing a great job in getting people out here. They're requesting the appropriate sources, and they're on their way. It's just there's just no way to plan for every particular scenario. We do it in law enforcement and in any other government agency as much as we can, but, you know, you can plan and plan, but you can't plan for everything. Some things are just unpredictable.
Yeah, but again, I don't mean to badger you, but everybody looked at that storm track after the Katrina hit Miami and then turned to the north and west and said, well, here it comes.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like you said, it came very, very quickly. I mean, here we were Friday afternoon, and it was looking for the Florida Panhandle. And the forecasters have been so correct all along in their other forecast of, you know, where the hurricanes were going to land, that, you know, here in Louisiana, everyone went to bed Friday night thinking everything was fine, and then we wake up Saturday morning and think about, you know, it's a Saturday morning. A lot of people either sleeping late or they're not at home watching TV, listening to the radio, so they don't know what's happening. So many people probably weren't even aware of it till, you know, late Saturday night. So even then we're looking at a point, we really didn't know anything that this was coming for us until, say, early Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes time to mobilize numbers such as this. I mean, you're talking a great amount of people.
Yeah.
It takes time to mobilize, you know, that amount of personnel.
Trooper Lewis, I know you're busy. We'll let you get back to work. We appreciate
your
time.
Well, thank you so
much.
I appreciate your help, and we appreciate you getting this information out to everybody.
Okay. Trooper Julie Lewis of the Louisiana State Police joined us by phone from Baton Rouge in Louisiana. Let's get another caller on the line. This is Wilford. Wilford's calling us from, what is this, Route 149 in Shreveport?
Yes, sir. This is Wilford from I-49. Actually, we just stopped in Shreveport. That's where I'm from. But my wife and I, we're living in New Orleans right now, right across from the Superdome.
One of those high-rise buildings there?
Yes, sir, one of the high-rises. My wife and I, we're both medical students with LSU.
Uh-huh.
And so we've seen our building partly on the news and on, you know, different other things. So we've seen, I guess, how the water has risen probably close to about two stories now.
Hmm.
We live actually on the ninth floor, so I'm not sure how our how our property is. I'm hoping that it's fine, but at the same time, it does look bad there. You know, there's a hospital on the other side, about a block from us, University Hospital,
mm-hmm.
and a charity about two streets up on Tulane, and then also Tulane University Hospital, and a girl who's riding with us, a caravan here. Her mother actually works in University Hospital. She's a nurse, and there's some people that are still stranded in University. It's on Gravier Street, two streets up from where we live.
So what are you going to do now?
Well, we're going to be here for the weekend in Shreveport, Louisiana. It's North Louisiana, and then we're going back to Baton Rouge to stay there a while. We got an email saying that they'll possibly move the medical school up to Baton Rouge, but they're doing a conference call today. The administration is, so we're going to see what's going on. But we have a few changes of clothing. Saturday morning we evacuated, and we were one of the blessed ones to evacuate. I just thank the Lord for that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, a lot of people are, like you say, and we've seen and heard, are still down in New Orleans, and that's very unfortunate, you know. But I just would like to say that, I mean, I appreciate the effort. You know, a lot of times you can't plan for something like this, and nobody, you know, saw this coming. You know, we've been saying, well, it's going to happen. You got Betsy and you've got Camille and things, and, you know, but you can't really plan for a natural disaster like this. So I just appreciate, you know, the government stepping in, but there is a lot more, you know, they can be done, you know, the quicker evacuation of the people at the Superdome and St. Bernard Parish, Plaquemines Parish, different other parishes and the hospitals, the people who actually need the evacuating the most. So, you know, I guess, and then the different things that have been, you know, scattered about on the news reels and everything about the looting. I'm sure looting has been going on, and I can empathize with the people who are, you know, getting the food and things like that. I really...
Not a lot of choice for them, yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't blame people, you know, on that. But I guess the other thing is that, you know, it's everybody is struggling down there right now, blacks, whites, Hispanics, whoever. So, you know, it's a really frustrating situation, and, you know, you spending 2 and 3 days and 4 days without drinking water. You know, the saying is water, water everywhere, but none to drink.
Yeah, that's true enough. You know? Just as true as salt water as it is of the filth that's filling the streets of New Orleans.
Exactly, exactly. So, I mean, we have some money saved up, you know, and things like that, but other than that, we're just staying with parents or in-laws.
Yep.
You know, with the clothes that we do have.
Wilfred, we wish you the best of luck, and then maybe your studies can get started again next week.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. It's still too early to determine the economic impact of the hurricane. There's no question insurance claims will run well into the billions of dollars. Reconstruction will take years. To get a better sense of what we know, here is Mark Vintner. He's a senior economist with Wachovia Bank, who studies regional economies. He's with us from his office in Charlotte, North Carolina. Good of you to join us today.
It's my pleasure.
What industries have been hardest hit?
Well, the entire economies have been pretty much put to a standstill. But the in terms of what we have in New Orleans, I mean, it's we have three big industries. You've got energy, of course. You've got tourism, and you've got international trade. And they've all been put out of commission. And much the same in southern Mississippi, where the gambling trade has been one of the fastest growing parts of the southern Mississippi economy, and it's been knocked out, and, mm-hmm. and so has the tourist trade.
What portion of the national economy does all this represent?
Well, it's actually quite small. If you were to take the affected areas, it would be about 1% of the nation's GDP. It would not be, it would not quite get up to 1% of the nation's GDP, but for the affected economy, it's been completely knocked out.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, in these situations, one of the things you begin to realize is class distinctions. Obviously, wealthier people are going to be much, much better off than the poor here.
That's true. And when you look at this hurricane and compare it with some of the ones that we saw earlier, a lot of folks are saying, well, don't hurricanes lead to an economic boom? And that's what happened after Hugo hit Charleston and Andrew hit South Florida. And also, really, from last year's four hurricanes in Florida. But in those cases, the economies were so much stronger than the New Orleans and southern Mississippi economies were. Florida grows 10 times faster than New Orleans does. So it's not just, and it's also immensely wealthier.
Mm-hmm.
Mississippi is the poorest state in the country, and Louisiana is the eighth poorest. And that means that folks who suffered uninsured losses in Florida or in Charleston had their own resources to fall back on. That's simply not going to be the case for many of the folks that lost their homes and their businesses in Mississippi and Louisiana.
That suggests that the rebound is also going to be very slow.
Yes, and that the total devastation, the greater amount of flood damage, that's a big difference as well. Really, the closest hurricane that we've had in recent times, and it wasn't nearly as bad, were the back-to-back hurricanes. I'm trying to think with Dennis and Floyd that we
right,
had in
yeah.
North Carolina. They also had a lot of flooding, and it was in a relatively poor area. And in that instance, it's only been in the last few months that Eastern North Carolina has seen employment come back up to its pre-hurricane level, which was back in 1999.
Mark Vintner, thanks very much for sharing that with us. We appreciate it.
Glad to do it.
Mark Vintner, senior economist with Wachovia Bank, joined us by phone from his office in Charlotte, North Carolina. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. As phone lines remain down, evacuees are scrambling for any sort of information about their homes, friends, family. Nancy Smith still wonders if her house is standing. She left her home in the coast city of Ocean Springs, Mississippi, and is now staying at a hotel in Tallahassee, Florida. She joined us from there by phone. Good to have you on the program.
Thank you.
Any word about your place from neighbors or friends who you may have gotten in touch with?
No, not at all. We had one gentleman who was staying at this motel who was going back today. He's in the service, and he was going back to Keesler Base in Biloxi. And he promised, he has friends in Ocean Springs, and he promised to kind of send back information as soon as he found it. We gave him our addresses, and he's going to let us know what he finds. But it doesn't look good for us.
Your town, and regrettably yours is not the only town, but your town is one of those that seems to have suffered extraordinary damage, and there's just very little information getting out.
Right, exactly. Perhaps because it's so small, and Biloxi next door, and don't forget the bridge between the two towns is gone. So I have a feeling that's another reason why there's not a lot of information coming out of there.
Mm-hmm.
People aren't getting in.
Given the scale of this disaster, are you satisfied the government's doing what it can at this point?
Well, I believe so. I mean, I'm not quite sure what anyone can do at this point. I mean, it's very early on. It's just for us who are kind of victims of the storm, it seems like an interminable amount of time, but actually mm-hmm. I think everything's being done that can be.
How are you spending your time at the hotel? I mean, it's been days now, and looking, stretching forward into some time
it's
to
awful.
Come.
Yeah, it's really awful. We talk to each other here. We're all evacuees, and we watch television, and everybody has been so kind. We've had many friends and family offer us places to stay, and we really want to just stay here because we want to. We're hoping any minute that somebody is going to say, "You can come home now. We fixed the roads enough so you can come back and see how your houses are." That's not happening, but we still live for that. We have to see for ourselves.
And the message you're getting, though, is, hey, no self-help. Stay where you are. Don't try to come back. You just make the problem worse.
Right, and that's frustrating because we can see now, as we're watching TV, we can see the rescue vehicles from other states going in there. So some roads are open somewhere, and we feel we belong there, too, even though we'll be in the way, I'm sure.
Yeah. We just have a couple of seconds left, but what are you going to do?
You know, we haven't decided. We'd love to say we're going to stay, but, you know, we're in our 60s, and I'm not quite sure how much time we have left to rebuild with Mississippi, but we loved it. We had a wonderful life there. We'd love to stay. We only had 2 months there. We were in Florida last year and with suffered through Francis and Jean and then moved. That's it.
Maybe you're the typhoid Mary. Nancy Smith,
maybe.
Thanks very much. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Nancy Smith of Ocean Springs, Mississippi, badly hit by the storm. Stay with NPR for continuing coverage of the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. If you're looking for web links or other information on how you can help victims, go to our website, npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.